Broadcasting live statewide from the Civic Media Studios in Green Bay, this is Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, your inside source on everything entertainment from Wisconsin to Hollywood. And now, a guy who wears a bathing suit in the shower, Pete Schwabba.
Welcome back. This is Pete Schwabba. You got Nightlight on a Friday night, broadcasting live from WGBW statewide, all over our beautiful state of Wisconsin, talking about all the things that affect us when it comes to movie and TV and some sports and music, everything. We cover it all here, and we're about to continue to cover it all. A couple texts here. Our question tonight, not too late to get in on the fun. What is your favorite 80s or 90s hair band song? We came to this question because it is Dee Snider from Twisted Sister's birthday. He's 69. Brett Michaels is 61 from Poison, part-time Crivets residence. And Bon Jovi and Richie Sambora's long feud is in the news today. They all have crazy... I don't know what Dee Snider's rocking these days, but they still all have that crazy hair. Just change it. It's just a, you don't have to keep doing that. Maybe their fans still have that kind of hair, so they want to like connect. I don't know. But what is your favorite 80s or 90s hair band song? 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Let us know on the text line from the 715. And I agree with this one. Sweet Child of Mine. I don't even know if I would say Guns N' Roses is a hair band. I mean, Slash has some pretty crazy locks, but that might be my favorite song from the 80s. That's a great one. Thank you, 715. Christy. Okay, so we were talking last night. Tarl Knight was here in the studio. He owns the Tarleton Theater. He's a promoter, a musician. He does a lot of things for the community. He was a great guest. It was really fun having him here. And Christy knows him really well. So I said, do you have a question for him? And she said, ask him about the such and such Pizno recital. She meant to type piano, but as is the case so often when we're texting, the wrong letter got in there. So I asked him on the air about the Pizno recital. I thought it was some community thing and it was supposed to be piano. So there you go. Christy is making shirts for the upcoming Pizno recital. That sounds... You won't want to miss that fun, that folks. The Pizno makes beautiful music. It sounds a lot like the piano, except you can't really hear the A key very well. Get it? And then we were talking about Ben Chan, who won today on Jeopardy. He needs one more victory to be the actual, the full-blown champ. Christy also says, go Ben, yay, and that he is smarter than all of us put together. And, you know, he probably is. And then someone texted in, why do you wear a swimsuit in the shower? Conrad, that's Christy again. What, do I have to answer this? It's a personal question.
Hey, if you want to, it's all up to you.
Look, okay, fine. They're Bermuda shorts. All right, but it's close enough. I used to wear a Speedo, but they don't make them like they used to. I don't know what that means. Let's get off this quickly. And she says, Todd won't give me a straight answer. That's because Todd Michaels respects people's privacy and the HIPAA laws. Sure, I can equate that to HIPAA, can I? All right, hey, let's move on. We are going to talk about some pro wrestling now. And we had this gentleman on the show last month. He's a Civic Media employee and a wrestling ring announcer. And he's also a big wrestling fan. Rich Locascio rejoins us here on Nightlight. Hey, Rich.
Pete, it's great to be back. How are you?
Buddy, I am great. Thank you for taking the time out on a Friday to join us here. tell me, okay, so I got a text from you earlier in the week.
Yeah.
WrestleMania 11?
40.
40. Oh.
WrestleMania 40, XL.
Oh, XL. Okay, I was thinking yeah, XI. Okay.
They're still doing the Roman numerals, which surprises me because they stopped doing it for a while.
Why would they do no Roman numerals?
I don't know. Well, no, why would they stop doing Roman numerals?
Or why both. If you're going to go with Roman numerals, commit to it.
Stick with one or the other. Right, exactly.
I don't care what they do, but be consistent. So tell us, you said this is coming to Milwaukee.
So SmackDown will be at the Pfizer Forum in Milwaukee next Friday night. I will be there. My girlfriend surprised me, so we're going to be sitting in some decent seats for the show. So they haven't announced what's going to happen as of yet, but with it being so close to WrestleMania, The Rock could show up, Roman Reigns could show up, Cody Rhodes could show up, or they could build more of the card for WrestleMania 40. I'm perfectly fine with that as well. Just being in the building with that energy, it's going to be phenomenal.
So how many people are they anticipating at something like that?
I would say somewhere around 15,000. SmackDown has been selling out consistently over the last month and a half without fail because The Rock has been showing up. Roman Reigns has been showing up. This is the biggest period of the year for the WWE as far as fan attendance, as far as just the hype leading into WrestleMania. This is what they call the road to WrestleMania.
Wow. Okay. So Conrad, the other day I told you it was coming to Milwaukee, right?
Yeah.
And you didn't believe me.
I didn't believe that WrestleMania was coming to Milwaukee because.
So it's pretty big stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. So you made a believer out of Conrad, finally. Okay. Rich. Okay. And I didn't know what I was talking about either. He was just like, are you sure about that? I was like, oh, I think so. That's what Rich says. So what are the big, are there big matchups? Like, and if you're listening and you're a WrestleMania fan and you have a question for Rich, this is the guy to answer it, folks. Don't hesitate because he's here and he answered all my questions last time. 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Are there big marquee matchups that you for sure will see? Like you said, you hope, or not you hope, but you know, The Rock could show up or this guy could show up, you know?
So Pete, since the last time we talked, there have been two major matches that have been booked for WrestleMania. It's two nights. So night one, they've officially announced it'll be a tag team match with The Rock and Roman Reigns versus the American Nightmare, Cody Rhodes and Seth freaking Rollins. Now, there's a stipulation on that match. If Cody and Seth win, the main event for night two will be bloodline free. And I'll explain what that means in a second. If The Rock and Roman Reigns win that match, it'll be bloodline rules for the main event of night two, which will be for the undisputed WWE Universal Championship, Cody Rhodes versus Roman Reigns. So the bloodline is the faction that Roman Reigns and The Rock are a part of. And basically, so if Cody and Seth win, everybody from the bloodline is banned from the arena that night. But if The Rock and Roman Reigns win, then a whole bunch of shenanigans I'm predicting could very well happen in the main event of night two.
What? First of all, I love that you, St. Patrick's Day is right around the corner. I love that you use the word shenanigans. I would have gone with tomfoolery, but I respect shenanigans. There's like a lot of drama here, isn't there? I know the bloodlines thing. I read about all of this last time you were here, and I was like, whoa, this is like serious soap opera type stuff and backstory, right?
So The Rock is going to be going, I mean, he's been on Instagram going on 18 to 20 minute rants about how he's the boss. He's part of the TKO board. He runs everything. He owns everything. You know, it's just a matter of time until, you know, they get the outcome that they're looking for. He's, you know, besmirching Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins and he'll go to arenas around the country and he'll make it seem like, oh, you know, he's representing the people. He's the people's champion, but he's knocking these people down because he's a bad guy again, which it's remarkable to think about in 2024 that The Rock is a heel, which is a bad guy term in right. pro wrestling. So I want to make sure that people understand that. I'm just not throwing out terms. It's like, oh, okay.
You know what kind of surprises me is like, I feel like some of these guys, and I'm probably wrong, get their start or they're entertainers to begin with or performers. And that's, I think, what leads them to wrestling. I had a cousin who played football at Northwestern. He went the wrestling route for a while and he's a performer. Like what I'm so blown away by with The Rock, and I don't particularly love his movies, but he still wrestles. Like it's cool. Like he went into wrestling. He got noticed. He made that transition. Now he's a big movie star. But he must like it enough or appreciate what it's done for him enough to still go back and participate in these events.
He is a third generation superstar. So his grandfather, and this is a big part of the storyline right now. His grandfather, the High Chief Pierre Maivia, was in the WWE. His father, the Soul Man Rocky Johnson, was in the WWE. Both WWE Hall of Famers, with Dwayne The Rock Johnson being a future WWE Hall of Famer as well. So to your point, yeah, I mean, some of them have established themselves as actors, entertainers. You know, we talked about Dave Bautista last time I was on. John Cena is a great example of that. So you have these people that may start out in pro wrestling and decide, you know, they want to go into entertainment. Where on the flip side of that, you have somebody like Logan Paul, who's in the entertainment space, that wants to dip into pro wrestling. And he's got so many influencers out there. I mean, he's a huge influencer himself,
right?
That not only does he dip his toes into WWE, but he's their current United States champion.
I mean, he's supposed to fight Mike Tyson soon.
Oh, that's his brother, Jake Paul.
Oh, oh, big diff.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, Rich, I want Mike Tyson to knock this guy out so fast. And I, you know, Tyson's like 60 now. It might not happen, but I mean, and whatever, they're all making money. They agree to do it, even if Tyson loses. But man, it's all showmanship, right?
So here's a trip to the Wayback Machine. So Mike Tyson was a part of WrestleMania 14.
Oh, I remember
he was a
that.
Huge part of it between the Heartbreak Kid Shawn Michaels and Stone Cold Steve Austin. That was the main event for WrestleMania 14. He was the special enforcer, eventually became the special guest referee in that match. And I don't want to spoil it for you because it's a great, it's a history-making moment in the annals of WWE.
That's so great. All right. So what we did tonight, Rich, when we come back, I want to ask you next about your ring announcing again.
Yes.
I wasn't thrilled with my nickname last time, so I thought of some new ones. I did.
You were the one who threw it out there.
I know. That's. I was on the spot, though. I was nervous. I had, you know, you were right there. And I really hurt my back really bad about a week and a half ago. So I'm not actually going to get in the ring yet. But don't write me off.
Boy.
When we come back, I'm going to give Rich some new nicknames for me when I do crawl in the ring. And we'll read some more texts. More with Rich Locascio talking wrestling coming up next on Nightlight on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Those deja vu things, or a train is trying to tell me something. But we'll have to stop thinking about it. I don't know. I doubt it. Subterranean by design. I wonder what I would find if I met you. Let my eyes caress you until I meet the thought of Mrs. Princess, who often wonder what makes her work. I guess I'll leave that question to the experts, assuming that there are some out there, but probably alone, solitaire. I can remember when I caught up with a pastime intimate friendship.
We have officially lit the night, and we're talking wrestling with Civic Media's own Rich Locascio, who is also a ring announcer. So before we go any farther, Rich, because I don't want to let our time get away and then not have any kind of approval for these nicknames I came up with. So how are these? The Human Body Slam.
Are you the one getting body slammed?
Well, for sure.
Okay, that's not good.
Okay. The couch potato.
Just be honest. The couch potato. Okay, now this ties into what you were talking about earlier. You were talking about John Ritter and Three's Company.
Yes, I was.
You remember a movie from the early 90s called Stay Tuned?
I don't remember that, actually.
There was a scene in that movie where John Ritter and his wife, Pam Dauber, are wrestling these two Gorgon people. His wrestling moniker was the couch potato. So unfortunately, Pete, that's already taken.
Okay.
So I don't make the rules.
That was an alternate anyway. How about this? The Whiff King.
The Whiff King?
Yeah.
As far as, you know, odor or
scratch,
baseball ability.
I already don't like the look on your face, Rich. Let's move on. The
just being honest with you.
I appreciate that. The Dive King.
Are you jumping off the top rope?
Take a dive.
Ooh.
They frown on that sort of thing?
I would probably steer away from that one.
Okay. Well, you guys are tough. How about Pete? Take a knee, Schwabba.
Interesting. Are you going to be coming out in a football uniform?
Yeah, it's just like, you know, I could either like Kaepernick it or like just kind of take a knee like it's halftime or like when a guy's injured, you know. The bottom line is, Rich, I'm not wrestling. So if I have to whiff, okay, take a dive, take a knee.
Unless your finisher is like you're dropping the knee from the second rope or the top rope, that doesn't work.
All right, we'll keep working on this. I you know what?
Yeah.
Had about enough.
This will be like an ongoing project with you and IP. It's perfectly fine.
I'll be honest. I don't like your attitude right now, Rich.
Hey, you know what? As a friend, I'm protecting you from any future ridicule. That's all this is.
Thank you for that. Well, Conrad, come up with something. We got to have Rich do one more announce.
I like the couch potato.
Couch potato. Yeah, but it's plagiarism. I don't know if I can do that. We'll figure it out. So Rich, how did you like, you weren't ring announcing last you were here, right? Like, is this a new thing? You decided to get back into it, or how does that work?
I was out of it for a while. I had gone to sit, you know, my biggest thing is whether I'm ring announcing or I'm sitting in the front row or somewhere in the crowd, I'm supporting independent wrestling. That's the most important thing.
Okay.
So recently I did some ring announcing for Racine Championship Wrestling. They had a show in Racine. I did a show for Legacy Pro Wrestling in West Dallas. I mentioned the Midwest Gaming Classic the last time I was on. I can officially announce that I will be ring announcing yet again for the Midwest Gaming Classic this year at the Baird Center. That's the first weekend in April.
Okay. Is that the one at Bruce City?
Bruce City Wrestling's a part of that. Yeah, okay. Bruce City did it last year, and I got the call to do it again this year, so I'm certainly thrilled about it because there's always a huge crowd when it comes to wrestling at the Midwest Gaming Classic.
Okay, that's pretty cool. So are you excited?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Just, you know, the we were in a huge spot amongst the vendors up on the third floor last year. And we always had a huge crowd. They were just, you know, I had three rows of chairs circling the ring. And then you had a whole bunch of people just standing around. What is going on? And we'd always have a huge crowd there. So certainly looking forward to it. We had such a great time last year.
That's so cool, dude. I'm happy for you. That's so great. All right, just thought of a couple more. Can I run them by you?
Please.
Okay. Pete the Snuggler Schwabba.
Are you coming out with a Snuggie or a blanket or?
No, there's a method to my madness here, Rich. I think if the other wrestler thinks all I want to do is cuddle him, he is going to stay the heck away from me, you know, unless he finds me attractive, which whatever. Or
you're going to lull them into a false sense of security. Maybe. You might be onto something.
Yeah. There. And then I give him a poke in the chops or I go low. I go below the equator. How about Captain Cuddler?
I mean, again, you may be onto something. We're going to have to hone this over some time.
Rich is being so nice. Okay. I got here. This is the bona fide. This is the one we're going with, Rich. The Schwabinator.
Right. Oh, that's a lock.
Do we have
that's
it?
A
okay.
Lock.
All right.
Yeah.
Conrad, are you ready? Do you mind introducing me?
No, let's do it again.
All right,
yeah.
Let's go with the Schwabinator this time though. Ladies and gentlemen, wrestling ring announcer extraordinaire, Rich Locasio.
Introducing from Green Bay, Wisconsin, the Schwabinator, Pete Schwabba.
I've got the chills. I'm speechless. I've got the chills in places I shouldn't have the chills.
Pete,
that was
I have
awesome.
To say something else.
Yeah.
Pete, I have to say something else. So the last time I was on your show and I did the ring announcing, that's become a promo on Civic Media.
Oh, dear.
And I've become famous within the office now. So I'm up in Waukesha on Tuesday.
Okay.
And I run into Jane Matinere and Greg Bach. And, you know, I walk into the studio room and everything. And they're like, do we know you? Like, oh, yeah, I'm Rich Locasio. Oh, the wrestling ring announcer guy. Yeah. If I'm going to be known for something in the office, I mean, I'll take that for right now. But obviously, I got to continue to build the rapport with my coworkers.
Well, I'm happy to help, buddy. And I love Jane and Greg are both awesome. So I'm very happy to hear that. All right. So, Rich, before we let you go, what are you watching? Is there something you can recommend on TV, movies, Iron Claw? Did we talk about Iron Claw last time you were here?
We did not.
Okay.
So I saw that I was down visiting my family for the holidays in Florida when the Iron Claw was still in theaters, and my girlfriend April and I went to see it. It is so good. And
I've heard,
you know, it's so good. And this is not just as a wrestling fan, as a movie fan as well. It's a very compelling story about the Von Erich family. How it didn't even get nominated for an Oscar is beyond me.
A lot of people thought it was going to. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's certainly a movie that if you've not seen it, whether you're a wrestling fan or not, go and see it. It's so good.
That is great to know. And I have not seen it yet, so I'm going to take you up on that. I don't know if you can stream it yet, but as soon as you can, I'm going to be all over it. I've heard nothing but good things. Rich, thank you so much for your time tonight, buddy, and have a blast at WrestleMania 12,000 or whatever, 40? Yeah, it was 40.
WWE SmackDown in Milwaukee at the Pfizer Forum next Friday night. Hey, you may see me on TV. I don't know.
I hope we do, man. Keep going with that ring announcing thing, too. Thanks so much, buddy. Have a great night.
Hey, thank you so much, Pete.
Anytime. All right, that is Rich Lucchesio. He is a Civic Media employee, and, man, he loves here's from the 920. Jim from Appleton says, Pete, quick pin Schwabba. Hey, thanks for the vote of confidence, Jim.
What about Pete, please don't hit me, Schwabba?
You guys have no faith in me. I'm the Schwabinator now, and I will take all of you down. All right, when we come back, we're going to talk some filmmaking. We're hitting all the bases tonight on Nightlight. Michael Nielsen joins me next, and I read more of your texts. It's Nightlight with Pete Schwabba on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Nowhere to go. It's hopeless, so I guess I'll leave it alone.
Well, I spent all that day fixing up.
Welcome back. Boy, we haven't heard Miles Davis in a while. Nice pull. From the 608. Sounds like Pete plans to clean up. Yeah, that's going to be my new wrestling nickname, the cleaner. The cleaning crew. He's one man, but he does the work of a crew. That's from the 608. The 920, Jim from Appleton. You're supposed to be the one doing the pinning, Pete. Oh, that's my problem. I just thought I was there to entertain people with all the various ways I could take a dive. Pete Quickpin Schwabba. What else we got here? From the 920, Paula. Conrad's mom checking in. Bon Jovi and Van Halen were my favorite bands. They both had several hits. Hard to pick just one. Yeah. And I put Van Halen like in a different category. Like they were kind of a hair band, but they were also just a rock and roll band. Like I think they're different than some of the other ones, but that's a great text, Paula. Carla, Aunt Carla checking in. Quiet Riot, Motley Crue, Scorpion, and Van Halen. If some alive next year, hopefully we'll play my 55th birthday next year. You mean your party? Like Jeff Spicoli when he hired Van Halen to play his birthday party? It's one of the best endings to a movie ever. Christy Barlament from the 920 says, Whitesnake, Here I Go Again. That is a great song. And that's probably one. Listen, I'm a bad guitar player, but I love figuring out 80s rock and like house music songs on my guitar. I know that sounds weird, but Here I Go Again is one I like to play a lot. But yeah, Aunt Carla, Riot, Quiet Riot sang, Come On, Feel the Noise. That was it. You got it here in another text. So it's Aunt Carla's birthday, Conrad. Is that true?
Yep. Okay. Happy birthday.
55. That's a big one. You're not a kid anymore, Carla. Time to clean up your act. Come On, Feel the Noise. Oh, I'm with you, Carla. That is a great song. I forgot about Quiet Riot. That's hilarious. Okay, so let's keep moving here. I am very excited to welcome my next guest. He is a filmmaker, Madison-based, but he's done a couple films based here in Northeast Wisconsin, a couple documentaries. My pleasure to welcome to Nightlight, Michael Nielsen. Michael, welcome.
Hey, Pete, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
Doing very well.
Are you in the car?
I am in the car. I know. Okay. If I had a little more time coming from my last engagement, I would have been home with my whole setup with a similar mic to yours and everything. So I feel very naked right now.
Well, that's okay. I just be careful driving. I see you have your seatbelt on, and that was a dead giveaway, unless you're like one of those people that wants to be extra safe at home and strap in.
Yes, I assure you I am not driving.
Okay.
No worries.
Good. We don't want to be, I don't think our insurance covers that kind of thing. So,
right.
I interviewed you several years ago on public television about your film Last Day at Lambeau, and we haven't spoken since. I saw you at the Wisconsin Film Festival last year, and I said, oh, that's Michael. I got to go say hello. And then, you know how it works. You work around the room, and then you were gone. But tell me, let's start with Last Day at Lambeau. Since we're broadcasting statewide, but we are in Green Bay, downtown Green Bay. Tell us about the film, and where can people see it?
Well, I'm sure folks won't have trouble guessing the subject matter based on the title. that was my first feature documentary. We released it in 2012, and then, yes, broadcast it statewide on Wisconsin Public Television in 2016. It was about Brett Favre's dramatic departure from the Green Bay Packers, joining the Minnesota Vikings and coming back for one final game at Lambeau Field in 2010. That was obviously the season the Packers won the Super Bowl, and we were filming it during that season. And I, as a lifelong Packers fan, was intrigued by my own level of emotion surrounding it. I didn't know why I had any justification to care as much as I did. And so the making of that was very much a self-interrogation into why do I have any reason to care as much as I do about the outcome of this story?
Did it surprise you how much you cared? Like, were you sort of like, whoa, I'm really into this?
Oh, very much so. and making the film kind of cured me, I think, of a lot of that, in the sense that now, as diehard a Packers fan as I've ever been, but I think of it very much and acknowledge it very much as an irrational passion. It's like I indulge in this thing that doesn't make sense, but I acknowledge it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, that actually makes sense. Where can people see the film somewhere? Is it streaming somewhere?
Absolutely. Yep. You could just Google that and find it. It's on Vimeo, which is a video hosting site. And it's been up there for many, many years. You can watch it for free. So you can get that and throw it up on Apple TV. Easy to watch.
Outstanding. All right, so you have a new film. We'll get to that in a minute. But you also, when I say I missed you last year at the film festival, I also missed your film. I host a lot of Q&As and do interviews there and stuff, and so I'm kind of limited as to what I can see. And I missed the screening. You had a film called Beyond Human Nature.
Yes, sir.
And that was based on an incident that happened here in Green Bay several, many, many years ago. Tell us about that film.
It was. So that one was about the Tom Monfils homicide investigation of 1992 to 95, which was, again, in the news rather recently, as many of the defendants known as the Monfils Six in the media have been released on parole. So the last to be released, Keith Kutzka, was released in 2023, so last year. So he's now out as well, and they've been doing events talking about their experience and all that. I was an outsider to that story. I that was brought to me by people who had relationships to the Monfils Six and advocated for their innocence. I wasn't interested in doing an advocacy piece, though. I was honestly just curious in how a story like this gets so out of hand. So I interviewed the lead investigator, Randy Winkler, the prosecutor, John Zukowski, who's now a judge in Green Bay. And I've stayed on good terms with everybody, which is not a terribly common thing in the world of true crime. You usually lose the trust of one or the other side. But we had the prosecution at one of the screenings last year at the Milwaukee Film Festival, and we had our premiere in Green Bay and had people from the defense there. So we tried to have a fairly fair retelling of that story. And that's available anywhere you buy or rent movies on digital. So that's something that you can find on Apple Movies or Amazon, anywhere.
So there was controversy around that, too. If I read correctly, the family doubted the outcome. How did you find that project? Like, you said someone brought it to you. What makes you think, as a documentary filmmaker, yes, this is the thing I want to spend years of my life on? Because it's very time consuming, right?
Yeah, and you're not joking. I mean, that one took 9 years of my life to make, and the lives of those closest involved as well, the producers and everything. You don't ever really know outside just an inner feeling that you think there's something interesting enough here. Usually it's a question that you're just trying to answer for yourself that maybe is unanswerable, and that's why it's intriguing. But there just has to be something that's juicy enough to kind of maintain your bite, so to speak, for a lengthy period of time. It's usually a good sign when you find yourself ruminating on it when you're not working on it. That's a fairly good sign that you can stick with it. But it was brought to me by advocates who had written a book arguing for the innocence of the Mon-Files 6. So that's how I was introduced to it. They had seen Last Day at Lambeau and they said that they had, you know, a great story for a documentary. And then after hearing that story from them, and Cal Mon-Files is who you're thinking of, Tom's brother.
So yes.
Tom Mon-Files was the deceased. Cal believes that his brother committed suicide and was not murdered. And so he's an advocate for these six guys as well. It's a very intriguing story. And so I just wanted to understand it from every perspective. I wanted to understand how the investigation went down. I wanted to understand how the district attorney at the time thought through his job and what he brings to a trial and how he got a conviction, and then understand what the experience has been for the six individuals who have been imprisoned.
My guest is Michael Nielsen. He is a documentary filmmaker and owns or is a part owner of Story First Media. So, okay, you say you're trying to be fair. You're trying to hear both sides. You must have your own opinions. That's very interesting that a family member wants justice, but it doesn't involve finding the actual, he thinks his brother committed suicide. That's crazy. Was that revealed to you while you were shooting or did you know that going in?
We knew that going in. Okay. He had been pretty public about that. That's definitely one of the most intriguing aspects of the story. It's one of those things that sticks with you and makes you feel like you could sustain the making of it for 9 years. Because it's hard to square in your own head. Like it's hard to put yourself in the position of a sibling of someone who dies and then is ruled by the court that was murdered, to say like, I disagree with the court. I think my brother committed suicide. There's fascinating, compelling cases, to make on all sides of this. So, I do have my own opinion, but in some ways, it's not, I don't mean to be coy. If we were talking over beers at a bar, I'd happily share with you my opinion, but in some ways it ruins the movie to know what I think going in. I never make a declaration in the movie where I come down. When we screened it at film festivals, the audience coming out is still split. I still hear from different people who saw the movie, liked it, but had different outcomes or different beliefs about what happened. So it's a great conversation starter.
So let's do this. I don't expect you to tell me what your opinion is on the air tonight. Let me ask you this. How convinced are you that your point of view is correct, whatever it may be?
My point of view is fairly moderate. So okay. I would say I'm pretty sure that I'm right in what I think. It's not terribly extreme. I don't think anything too far-fetched happened. So.
Okay, very good. I remember when that case came out, I was like, wow, that's a lot of people to be in on this and not have anybody snitch or
right.
To have five other people go along with it. I just don't know if I buy that. But
Cal says that in the film.
Okay.
Yeah, he talks about how he quotes, I think he attributes it to Winston Churchill, but it might be misattributed, the idea that one person can keep a secret, but not six.
Yeah, exactly. That's really fascinating. How did the screenings go? What was it like watching it with a full theater in Madison last year?
It was great. The world premiere was in Green Bay at the Green Bay Film Festival. And that was fascinating because it was a very emotional screening. Like everyone in the theater at the Tarleton there in Green Bay seemed to kind of have a personal attachment to the story. There were family members in there. Of everyone from all sides. So that was a very interesting screening. Then in Madison, it was great as well. We had a little more distance from the personal connection. So that was an interesting different reaction, watching it more as a movie as opposed to a lived experience that they had all gone through. And then Milwaukee was fascinating too, because we had the prosecution come and join us and tell, their side of the story at a Q&A there. That was fascinating as well. So it's an endlessly interesting story. I think it'll continue to kind of mystify people for years.
Okay. Apologies. If I think I asked you where we could see Last Day at Lambeau, where can people see Beyond Human Nature?
Anywhere you buy or rent digital movies. So okay. Amazon or Apple Movies, anywhere like that, you can find it.
That's really, how is that intimidating? Like, you're a documentary filmmaker. You're investigating basically a murder. You don't know what kind of people you're going to come across. Were you at all nervous or a little scared at times?
There were phone calls I had during the making of the film with people that when I didn't know who they were, I didn't know what they'd be like, where yeah. I had a little bit of hesitation. I remember there was a call. I'm friendly with him now, but the lead investigator, Detective Randy Winkler, when I first called him, I was nervous because I wasn't sure what he was going to think of me. You never know what people are going to think yeah. you're doing, right? Like they're suspicious of what your intentions are. So I tried to disarm people fairly early that I wasn't coming in with an agenda.
Yeah.
That's usually the most nerve-wracking thing to me is when I feel like they might have the wrong idea of what's motivating me.
That's really interesting. And the trust you have to gain as a documentarian is really incredible. And I'm sure that's not easy at times.
Time consuming. Yeah.
Time consuming. Well, especially you worked on it for 9 years. I mean, that's really, really incredible to me. Okay. So next I want to ask you about your new film, String Theory, The Richard Davis Method. I will ask Michael about that. That is coming up next. And then I want to hear about Story First Media. That sounds like a really cool thing you're doing there and kind of what you guys are, what kind of projects you're working on there too. We'll talk about that next with filmmaker Michael Nielsen on Nightlight with Pete Schwabe. Boy, I would not want to mess with Maggie Dawn. That's all I'm saying. I've heard that promo several times now, and she is intimidating. I can't imagine. I know she's a lawyer, so Conrad, take a memo. Do not get on Maggie Dawn's bad side.
Yeah, definitely.
Not that I need to be reminded of that. A couple more texts here from Stacy Sue from the stream. Says, Pete the Crusher. Yeah, I like that. That's a great one, Stacy. I don't know if I can pull that off, but great nickname. And Aunt Carla says she's actually 54 today, but next year, 55, she will find some survivors of the big hair bands to play her birthday party for the big 5-5 for double nickels. Carla, that's a big birthday for a young lady. The venue will be announced later in the year. Yes, Fast Times, but I didn't save Brooke Shields. Carla knows her movies. Carla, we have to do some. Maybe we'll do a live broadcast, Conrad, from Carla's birthday party. Let's discuss off air. Take another memo. Okay, I got a couple minutes more here with filmmaker Michael Nielsen. Michael, thanks for your time tonight. Great to have you here. Your new film is called String Theory. And at first, I know there's a book by Richard Green I struggled through years ago. I was like, oh, wow. And then I saw it's The Richard Davis Method. And it's about a musician. Tell us about the story.
Yeah, different Richard. I fooled you there for a second.
Yeah.
So this project came to us initially as a commercial project. So the Richard Davis Foundation for Young Bassists is an organization that Richard Davis started in Madison. Richard, for those who don't know, is a renowned double bass and electric bass player who played with the likes of Van Morrison on Astral Weeks, got acclaim from none other than rock critic Lester Bangs at the time for that. He played with Miles Davis. He played with Eric Dolphy. He was a massive, hugely influential kind of Pied Piper of the bass in the music community. He moved to Madison in the 70s to become a professor at the University of Wisconsin, to become the bass professor. And he started the Richard Davis Foundation for Young Bassists because, to his mind, there wasn't adequate early education starting around, you know, similar ages that the violin or piano start, where they all start at like, you know, age 3. the bass you wouldn't start until you were teenagers. So he started this foundation for ages 3 to 18, where he would shepherd the new generation of bass players up. And every year in Madison, people don't know this, but world-renowned bass musicians come to Madison, and they're clinicians working with young people, passing on that generational wisdom of the bass onto to the next generation. And it's remarkable. So we captured one of these conferences in 2018, a fly on the wall, and then interviewed all the clinicians and talked to Richard. Richard sadly passed last year at the age of 93. And now this film is largely a chronicle of that time, of that foundation, and also an ode to him.
No kidding. Now, is that on the festival circuit at the moment?
It is. So it's going to be playing at the Wisconsin Film Festival. So that's going to be the world premiere.
Okay, very cool. So people will be able to see that, I assume, after it makes its festival run. That'll turn up somewhere on streaming. Okay.
Absolutely.
You can see Last Day at Lambeau on Vimeo, Beyond Human Nature. Just maybe do a Roku search, right? It's on several different platforms.
Yeah, it's on Apple, Amazon, Vudu, all of them.
Okay, cool. And then tell me about Story First Media. If I remember correctly, when I interviewed you on TV several years ago, you were just launching that, I think, or had just launched it. Does that make sense?
So we're actually in our 15th year. So we've been around since 2009. It was founded by my father, Dave. I was living in Austin, Texas at the time. He was coming from kind of an ad agency background. I was obviously my film background. And we realized we were just speaking the same language about storytelling, but from different disciplines. So we kind of brought our trades together and founded Story First Media, which has become a video production and brand storytelling firm. So we help organizations, everything from a nonprofit to a major corporation, hone and craft and tell their story and understand their story, both internally and externally. And in addition, we produce movies. So it's kind of telling stories at every level.
What do you prefer? Ad type thing or a full feature length documentary?
You know, what's wonderful about it is that you get to like be the artist with the movie stuff. And that's like where, you feel like a kid again. But the commercial stuff is the great challenge because you're having to communicate the value of storytelling to non-story people, right? These people who are not from my world, not from Dave's world. So we're having to, articulate why storytelling is so powerful, why it's important, why it's so human. It may be the very thing that makes us human. And articulating that to people and sharing that is really gratifying and fulfilling.
That's very well said. And it's interesting you say that because when I lived in Los Angeles for many years, I did a lot of interstitial writing and I wrote ads for networks and they would give you parameters. And mm-hmm. I liked that. When you sit down and write a screenplay, I love that too. That's my first love, but you could go anywhere and it's overwhelming at times. But when you write a 30-second spot or a 60-second spot and they say, here's what we want, it's kind of confining in a good way. Does that make sense? You find
totally.
That too?
We call those creative limitations. You need those boundaries in order to actually be creative. I completely agree.
Oh, that's great. Okay, so what we do on this show, Michael, we like to ask people what they are watching, binge watching or cringe watching. Are you watching anything on TV or have you seen any of the Oscar films?
I saw all the Oscar films for sure. I just saw Dune 2. I enjoyed that quite a bit.
Same.
However, I if I want to make a controversial statement in the film world, at least.
Sure.
So I just saw the 1959 French film Pickpocket today for the first time. Cinephiles are going to hate.
Wow.
They're going to challenge my credentials hearing this that I've never seen this film. However, I think I admire it as a piece of art. It's on the Criterion Channel, if anyone's interested. It is worth seeing. I admire it as a piece of art, but holy cow, is that a boring movie. It's exquisitely made. I love French cinema, but that was hard for me to get to. And it's only like a bit over an hour long, tough to sit through.
a true cinephile should appreciate your honesty. Listen, buddy, thanks so much for your time tonight. Be careful when you get on the road there. I'm glad you were strapped in, even during the interview. That's safety first, my friend.
Absolutely. I don't know what kind of collision I was going to experience with you.
Thanks so much and continued success, buddy.
Thanks.
All right. That's Michael Nielsen. Conrad, we jammed through some guests tonight, didn't we?
Yeah.
Do we forget anybody?
I don't think so.
We got everybody, right?
Well, we need to introduce the Schwabinator.
The Schwabinator. Listen, he's going to watch out for this kid. He's coming into his own. I'd like to thank my guests tonight, Joe Furlow, Rich Locasio, Michael Nielsen. Thank you for all your texts. Always so much fun reading them and when you're part of the show. I will be in Madison doing the show from Madison on Monday night. One of my guests will be James Runde. He will be performing live in studio. Please join me Monday night. And, you know, let's see if Nightlight's any different. Conrad will be manning the ship here in Green Bay. So much fun. Thanks for everything tonight. It was a pleasure to Nightlight with all of you. I'm Pete Schwabe saying goodnight, Wisconsin.